and welcome back to the Worcester Shire podcast. We're three sisters who decided to start up a podcast to talk about our favourite TV shows and movies. And this week we'll be continuing on with Desperate Housewives in our segment called Wisteria Lane. Say hi, guys.
Hi, I'm Suna.
I'm Sadie.
And I'm Arzum. And here in the Shire, we have a motto, and that motto is, if attempted murder is a crime, then attempted comedy is a podcast. This week we'll be covering Season 2, Episode 2, and the episode is called You Could Drive a Person Crazy. So there's so much going on in this episode. Susan is not so pleasantly surprised when she finds out Carl has a new girlfriend. Lynette has gone back to work and has left Tom in charge of the house, including the cleaning. Bree's mother-in-law, Phyllis, is still like driving her crazy and is just like really publicly grieving everywhere and sobbing and not letting Bree grieve at all. Carlos has stopped letting Gabby run anything to do with their account, so she's forced to go see him every day. Betty Applewhite is running into some problems keeping her secrets, and George comes back into Bree's life for some reason.
Yeah, a lot did happen in this episode.
Yeah, it did. So who do we want to start with?
I think it's either Gabby or Lynette.
Let's go Gabby, I reckon.
Alrighty.
So where we left Gabby and Carlos off last week was Carlos has agreed to sort of still being with Gabby and forgiving her, so to speak, about the affair, but he hasn't really forgotten her. They still haven't built that trust up back. And because of that, Carlos has taken away Gabby's access to their joint account. So anytime she wants to pay a bill, write a check, buy anything, she has to go see Carlos at the prison. He says it's the only way he can guarantee she's going to visit him.
Which is fair.
Is it fair?
No, it's not fair, but like,
she has to run the house now that he's in prison. She has to pay every single bill. She has to do all the grocery shopping. She has to run things. Like, she has to have access to money and not go to the bank every single day and not have to go to Carlos every single day. Yes, she had an affair, but he did deliberately impregnate her against her will. So
when you put it like that, yes.
Yeah, it's just a bit messy. So they have this argument about her having to come to the prison all the time. And they have this little argument where she says, why are all rich men jerks? And he's like, well, why are all beautiful women bitches? See you next week. Okay, baby. Same time tomorrow. Okay, baby.
And then they kiss.
That's like not uncommon for them though. Like literally last episode we were talking about this where they're like, we're both terrible people. Yeah, at least we're rich.
They really are terrible people.
But can I just say, they're well-suited terrible people. They're both terrible people. And they nor make each other better or worse. They're just terrible.
After the rich man, beautiful woman comment, it's found out around the prison that Carlos is, in fact, a rich man. And now he's being blackmailed.
Yeah. I like how this comes across as well, though. Gabby's like, how would someone know that you're rich? It's like, maybe because my wife announced a room full of criminals that I'm a rich man. Like, such a good point, though. So, yeah, Carlos is being blackmailed by his bunkmate. I can't remember his name.
Richie.
Yeah, so Richie tells Carlos to get Rita $7,000 by tomorrow, otherwise he's dead meat. So Gabby schleps over to the prison. She gets Carlos to write his check and she goes and cashes it. And she goes to go see Rita to give her the money. Rita is living in, like, a lower socioeconomic area. From the looks of it, there's some random old lady just sitting on her doorstep, like, I don't know, peeling corn or something.
What's what you get in poor neighborhoods?
Yeah. What, you don't see anyone peeling corn in the rich neighborhood.
It's true, you don't. They're not the Hastings, they have to boil their own melons.
Exactly.
And Gabby goes over and the corn lady knocks on the door for her. Rita comes out. Gabby tries to give her the money. And Rita kind of reveals that this money is for a boob job and that Richie is obsessed with massive breasts. And she told him if he could get together the money, which she never thought he could, she'd do it. And Gabby takes a feminist ground, let's say.
Yeah.
And she says basically, like, I think your boobs are perfect. Like, you don't need to do anything you don't want to do with your body. And I wouldn't let him boss you around because he's in prison. Where's he going to go? Which, valid point. Where is he going to go? And then she's like, this money is an insult, and takes it back with her.
I know.
The next day, Carlos is looking a little worse for wear.
Yeah.
And Gabby's basically like, what the hell happened? And she's like, he's like, what do you think happened? you didn't give her the money, and I got beat up like I told you this would happen.
Yeah.
One of the things I forgot to mention that I love is that when all of this is happening, Gabby was against getting Rita and Richie the money anyway, because she's like, we shouldn't succumb to blackmail. It's never going to end, you know. You should just stand up to them, Carlos. Like, you know, you went to college on an athletic scholarship, for God's sakes.
Yeah, he's like, it was for golf.
I know. I know. And, like, I don't think it really, like, fits in with Carlos's narrative, can I just say? Because we're led to believe Carlos led, like, a rags-to-riches sort of, like, lifestyle where his mum had to sacrifice and do everything and their dad left them, quote-unquote, or maybe got killed. Who knows? We don't really know what Juanita did. But it's going to be a whole rags-to-riches thing. And it's like, if you want to – you were so good at golf that you got a scholarship for it, I feel like you were not that poor.
Yeah.
What poor person do you see with a, their own personal corn shucker on their front doorstep playing golf? No one.
Yeah.
So.
Corn shucker.
Well, that's what she is. Just this lady peeling corn on her doorstep. Like, she had no point to be in this story whatsoever. And they paid someone to sit there peeling corn. I'm, like, so confused.
Yeah. But did you guys notice she had no talking lines?
She had no talking lines, but she had corn lines.
Yeah. Did you remember the little tidbits I was telling you guys last week? If they have no talking lines, you don't have to pay them as much.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why she silently judged.
She had some eyeing the money lines.
Money is free.
Yeah. Basically what they were paying her was whatever she could pick up that Gabby didn't pick up for her.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when Carlos is all beat up and stuff, Gabby takes this opportunity to basically say, me and Rita have a lot in common, actually. You guys are both in prison and you think you guys are calling the shots. Joke's on you. Give me access to the accounts or you're going to keep getting bashed.
Yeah.
Good for Gabby.
Yeah. Then we see Gabby very gleefully writing checks at home.
And that's it for Gabby.
And that's it for Gabby, yeah.
Who are we doing next? Did we say Lynette?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Lynette's back at work finally. She started back up. She's excited to get going, it seems. And as she's getting ready for work in the morning, there is nowhere for her to like put down her newspaper, for her to put down her coffee cup because it's overflowing with dishes. There's flies everywhere. It's like she literally lifts up a plate and a fork is still stuck to it. Like it's filthy.
Mm.
And when Lynette kind of says like, Tom, like what's going on? Can you, why are the dishes piled up so much kind of a thing? He tells her, don't worry, babe. I have a system.
Yeah. And his system is, I just don't do the cleaning sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. I clean every 2 days. I let the mess, like, accumulate, and then I clean until it's sparkling, and then it just starts all over again. And Lynette rightfully points out, oh, I've never, like, seen it sparkling.
Yeah.
And Tom's just like, oh, that's because the kids messed up before you get home. And Lynette points out that there is a flaw in the system. But the thing that got me is that Tommy tries to, like, why did I just say Tommy?
Yeah, because he's a kid. Go on.
Yeah, actually, yeah, Tommy. Tommy, the fifth child.
Yeah.
Makes a point of saying, like, oh, well, I came home to mess all the time. I never said anything. Well, first of all, that's not true. Because remember when you came home and Lynette's T-shirt wasn't clean and you were about to throw up on her?
Exactly.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah.
Like and Lynette like pointed out, you came home to clutter, to untidiness. This is dirty. This is gross. This is unsanitary.
Yeah.
And Tom makes about this like control thing. He's like, oh, you're just trying to control. Like, let me do my thing. This is like, this is my thing now. You have to respect my decisions.
Yeah. This is when it would have been perfect for him, like you said last episode, for her to go, okay, well, I'm having a dinner party. Can you clean up and cook?
Yeah, exactly. For 7 people, short notice, 3 courses minimum. Yeah, Brie can do it. Can you?
Yeah, exactly. That's what he deserved right here.
I fully agree. So Lynette comes home from work, like, I don't know, maybe 2 days from now. Who knows when in the cycle this mess is happening. But Lynette comes home and it's filthy. Everyone's already asleep and it's just gross everywhere. And she wasn't expecting when she went back to work that she would have to come home and pick up the slack too. So before she gets into bed, she starts doing the dishes and cleans up the sink and stuff like that. And when she goes up to bed, she tells Tom, like, why it took her so long. And he's just kind of, like, unaware of how pissed off she is. Like, I don't know how. She's literally, like, seething, like, the smoke rolling off of her.
Yeah. But also, like, that kitchen was a disaster. It would have taken her a good at least 1 hour to clean it. He didn't want to check on her?
No, apparently, so I heard you come in a couple hours ago and, you know.
I heard you come in, just gave up on you, thought you were dead.
No, literally. No, he's like, I heard you come in a couple hours ago. And she's like, yeah, I had to clean the kitchen.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, thanks. You didn't have to do that. And she's like, well, I did because you're not doing it. And this starts a whole fight in motion where apparently Lynette has control issues and she doesn't respect him. And she's trying to control every aspect of his life. And he's allowed to have, like, say over the house and everything.
That wasn't the catalyst. The catalyst was the baby spit and the towel.
Yeah, exactly. So while all of this is happening, Lynette's like trying to get comfortable in bed and she's like, what is this? Because she's lying on a towel. And Tom's like, oh, don't worry about that. Like, Penny just threw up on our sheet, so I put a towel down, go to bed. Like, it's fine. And Lynette's like, no, that's gross. I'm changing the sheets. Like, are you well? Like, this is like the dumbest thing you've ever said in your life. And he's like, Lynette, the sheets are very clean besides the vomit. It's a very clean towel that you're on. I've made a decision. Please respect it. And she's like, no, because it's dumb and you're lazy. I'm going to change the sheets. Yeah, I made a judgment call. The baby threw up on your side of the bed and I put a towel down. What more do you want? Like,
and then they get into a literal physical fight about this.
I know.
Lynette's trying to change the sheets. He's trying to stop her. There's like hands and legs and sheets flying everywhere.
I know, literally.
And she ends up hitting him with a pillow, like physically assaulting him with a pillow. But did you notice as she's storming out, did you notice that the baby's crib is in their bedroom?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say as well. This must be like the best sleeping baby that's ever lived on this earth because earlier on, Lynette's in an interview and Stu farts and she starts crying. Like, this baby's just sleeping through this full domestic with her yelling about her vomit. Like, yeah. Lights are on, fists are flying, pillows are being thrown and Penny is asleep.
Yeah.
So Lynette ends up being like, fine, you sleep in the vomit, I'm sleeping on the couch, and goes downstairs. But instead of sleeping, she's stewing while watching a rat movie.
How freaking early in the morning did she wake up to go get a rat, by the way, might I ask?
Well, I don't think it was early in the morning. I think it was like midday when the kids were out doing stuff or whatever.
Oh, okay. I
like
don't
she
know.
Came back on her lunch break with her rat. Because she called it, hello, is anyone home? Yeah. So I think this was a... I must go buy a rat lunch break. I don't have time for this lunch business meeting. Can't go get food. I have to buy a rat.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Maybe her and the rat split a cheese on the way back.
But like 10 seconds later, she's seeing Brie at the restaurant.
Yeah, maybe she just stopped in on the way. She still has to eat. She has to like grab lunch to go.
That's where she got the rat from.
Exactly.
Yeah, so she gets home. She releases this mouse in the house.
House mouse, yes.
House mouse. And she takes off. When she gets back home, her rat scheme worked. Like the house is spotless. One of the kids dobbed in that there was a rat in the house and that's why daddy cleaned. And she was like, oh, really? She goes to Tom and I think he admits it or she tells him that the kids told her something happened and they accept that there was a rat issue.
And there's a flaw in the system.
There is a flaw in the system because... She's like, oh, so did you, like, you know, catch the rat and release it outside? And she's like, and he's like, no, I killed it, obviously.
With a shovel, violently, yeah.
So this
rat took, fight too.
This rat took the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah.
And then Lynette was taking out the rubbish and she saw the rat in the bin and she gave it a very heartfelt, I'm sorry you had to make this sacrifice, but you just saved my marriage speech.
I know. Oh, yeah, so then we see Tom, like, frantically cleaning, like, the grapes, the second Lynette is still eating them, like, off the table after that.
Oh, no.
So good. I think that's it for Lynette, though.
Yeah. Who next?
Yeah, let's do Susan. Susan is conflicted about her love life. She doesn't know if she wants Mike or she doesn't know if she wants Carl. She runs over Eden.
I don't think she wants Carl. I think she just doesn't want Carl to be happy.
Yeah, she said so. She said literally that. I want to be happy first.
Which, honestly, she's so real for that, though. That's the realest she's ever been.
The whole episode kind of starts with her, I don't know, going outside for some reason, getting the mail, the newspaper, the bin. She's getting something.
The newspaper.
And she looks across.
Yeah, because she maims a child.
That's right. There was the asshole paper delivery boy.
Yeah. Danny Farrell.
Yeah. So she looks around at Edie's house, and there's Carl in a robe going out to get the newspaper himself, and she is shocked at what she sees. But I don't know why she's shocked. Like, she knows that they went to Julie's birthday party together at the very least.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, like, she has a bit of a go at him, and then she storms back off to her place, and the asshole kid is chasing her down for her money because she hasn't paid the bill. Yeah. And he literally throws the newspaper at his wheel and makes him fly off the bike.
Yeah, I know. Literally, Susan needs to go to jail.
She does. She's the worst.
Like, not just for this.
She's, like, trying to murder kids and shit.
Kids and Edie.
I know. And then she gets even worse.
Yeah.
Next minute, she's complaining to Mother Julie about Carl's sex life.
I know. And Julie has to be the one to say, well, they're not just hooking up. They've been kind of dating for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I knew about it. And I didn't tell you because I knew this would be your reaction. Yeah. And it's like, you're, like, I think at this point, 13, 14-year-old daughter shouldn't have to protect you from her dad's dating life.
Yeah.
Poor Mother Julie.
Yeah. And Susan's carrying on about, like, how, oh, we share things. That's what we're known for. You are meant to tell me. And Julie says, like, you raised me to respect people's privacy. But first of all, when? When did she raise you to do that? Because not once has she taught you to respect anyone's privacy.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Susan is like, yeah, but you know that doesn't pertain to daddy's sex life.
Yeah.
Like, that's so gross and so weird. Like, stop it.
Yeah.
That is the worst thing you can say to a kid. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I'm sure there's worse things you could say to a kid.
But that's up there.
Well, it's up there, but, like, it's not like you mean nothing to me, having you was a mistake, for example.
That took a twist.
I'm just trying to think of something worse. Like, I don't know.
It wasn't a challenge, mate. Move on.
I made it one.
You're like, challenge accepted. I beat this kid. I'll make you sorry you were ever born.
I'm sorry she was born. But, yeah, so the daughter, Susan, goes on to say, oh, Edie's such a bitch. I can't believe she's been, like, throwing herself at Carl. Like, she probably didn't get back at me. And Julie's again, like, wrong again. Dad asked her out. Yeah, as Susan's carrying on and on about how, oh, we're like sisters. We share things. That's what people say about us. She suddenly is like, oh, he asked her out, like, the day after your birthday, like, your last birthday, as in the one that was at the piano bar. How many last birthdays did you have, first of all?
Yeah.
Second of all, she makes a point of being like, oh, because your father came and told me something I can't tell you anyway. So we share clothes, not really things. Okay, bye.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like she's told Julie so much worse things than the fact that your dad asked to get back together.
And also, I don't understand what her problem is with this whole, he asked me to get back together with him that day, but then he asked her out later. Like,
yeah,
you said no, he moved on. Why is it a problem?
Exactly. You said no. He has to move on. So he's like, okay.
How long did you want him to cry for?
At least 2 more years.
A million years.
Yeah, but at this stage, it's not that they just broke up that day. They had already been broken up for ages. Yeah. He was like, hey, let's give this another shot. She said no. Then he was like, fine, I'll ask Edie out.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I don't know. I don't see the problem.
And I think Edie's more fun anyway.
Yeah. I feel like him, her and Carl do seem to have, like, the same vibe.
That I'm the victim vibe?
No, like Edie and Carl.
Oh, okay, yeah, I agree.
Edie and Carl. Like, go with the flow, sort of let's have fun, keep it lighthearted.
Both a little bit sleazy, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. Except we later find out that Carl asked Edie to move in with him, so I guess it's not as light and easy as it seems. Next scene, we have, like, Susan going to go do whatever the freak Susan does. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Edie comes up in her, like, little matching, like, red shorts and top, little suit with her matching roller skates and pom-poms and a little cute hat. Like, she looks adorable, first of all.
She does.
Like, I loved it. I was just like, this is so cute.
Yeah.
And she's like, so how bad do you want to punch me?
She's literally just trying to pick a fight with Susan, honestly.
I know. I love her.
Yeah, by the way, like, I've been with Carl and he asked me to live together and...
He said it's the best sex that he's ever had, bar none.
Bar none. And it's like, that's a weird thing to talk about, but okay.
Yeah, I know.
And that's a weird thing for you to go and tell Susan, but okay.
But I don't know. I guess if you put it into the context of Susan burnt down her house and kept stealing the guy she wanted and also asked out the guy that was working on her site when she asked her not to and she tried to be friends with her. Yeah. And Susan's like been a terrible person to her the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think she just wanted to throw it back in her face a little.
Yeah.
And instead of, like, taking the high road, Susan listens for a little bit, and then she's like, well, the day he asked you out, he told me he wanted to get back together.
And Edie is upset by this and starts rollerblading after Susan and her car, as you do.
Great idea.
It just reminded me of that scene from, like, The Stupids, where they're like, oh, eight wheels.
I know. Yes.
So Edie quickly catches up to her, and she's like, basically... You take that back. Susan says no, and if you don't let go of my car, I'm going to floor it and drag you with me.
Yeah.
They kind of get into this discussion, and Edie's like, I'm going to key your car if you don't take it back, and you can suck on my exhaust pipe. All of the dramatics you can possibly think of over literally just a guy. Yeah. Like, this is just a man. Hit him with your car.
Yeah.
When Edie kind of says, you're just jealous, and it's because everyone knows you and Mike are over, and you don't want me to be happy, so whatever, Susan. And she goes to leave. Suddenly, Susan is not done with this conversation, and she reverses onto Edie.
Yeah.
But she was reversing to catch Edie.
So she says...
Who tries to catch someone with their car?
I know.
Like, honestly, and if you're trying to catch them, you know she was near your car, you keep a lookout. How fast do you think she is?
Carl comes over after this and is like, so you shattered her tibula.
Yeah.
And also she cut herself on the thorny roses that you gave her, you bitch.
I know. But yeah, so Carl comes over and he talks about how he asked Edie to live together. And Susan's mad because she's like, this was meant to be my moment. I was supposed to be moving in with Mike and I was supposed to be happy. But instead, you're happy.
I know.
And, like, I don't like this whole thing because at the end of it, basically it gets around to Carl admitting that he's never loved another woman like he's loved Susan. And that brings her great joy for some reason.
Yeah, and,
like, I'll tell you why I hate this. Because would she be willing to admit that to Carl if he was upset about her moving in with Mike?
No, absolutely not.
Would she ever say, I've never loved another man like I loved you, as she's moving in with Mike?
Absolutely not.
Exactly. So why is she expecting that from Carl? Why does she have to be the love of everyone's life? Like, it didn't work out. You don't even want to be with him anymore. Move on. He doesn't have to still freaking love you.
Because she's silly, quirky Susan. She needs something.
Like, I don't understand. Like, just move on with your life.
Why? When I could cause a scene.
That construction worker was right about her. She causes the drama.
She absolutely does.
She absolutely does.
Like, all she had to do was mind her own business. All she had to be like, that's great for you, Edie. I'm happy for you. And just mind her own business. Instead, she tries to kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not only that, like, later on, she goes to, like, her neighbor, Betty. And again, she's not minding her own business. Yes, there's clanking going on in her house. But, like, stop questioning it. It could be a washing machine. It could be a dryer. It could be anything.
But her point was that it's keeping her up at, like, 2 a.m.
Also, like, she's not in the wrong there because we do know she's got someone in her basement. And, you know, if that's going on in your neighbor's house, you probably should call someone or do something about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You shouldn't be like, oh, she's probably keeping someone in the basement. Like, I'll mind my own business. Sometimes it's okay to be nosy.
The last time she was nosy, she was held hostage. Like, you'd think she'd learn.
No, last time she went to feed a dog, she was held hostage.
Yeah, but she's the one that put this whole Mary Alice thing into everyone's sight. She's the one that started digging through it. She's the one that went with Edie, broke into the house. She's the one that was, like, looking after it. She puts herself in trouble by meddling into things that don't concern her all the time. You would think that she's learned her lesson.
But yeah, while we're talking about that, why don't we just cover off on the Applewhite storyline then and then go to Bree?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when Susan comes over, so first of all, we hear that clanking sound when the Applewhites are enjoying dinner. So Betty and Matthew are just having dinner upstairs and the guy is like clanking downstairs. And what we find out is they say that they don't talk to him. That's part of his punishment. That's what they say.
Yeah. And listening to his clanging is part of her punishment.
Yeah. And so they're just sitting there, you know, suffering with the clanging while the person's suffering down there. But part of the punishment for whatever it is that they've done is that they don't talk to him. And so we know that this clanking is happening. And that's when Susan approaches Betty and is like, doing some remodeling. And she says yes. And Susan's like, oh. She was not expecting that. Yeah, she's like, at 2 a.m. And then Betty says, oh, it's Matthew. He just does like projects around the house and all of that.
I don't even hear it anymore.
Yeah. And then as she's saying that, Matthew shows up with like some groceries behind them. But the clanking was going on. So obviously it wasn't Matthew.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think this has spiked Susan's interest. Then the other thing we see with Betty is at the end of the episode, she's like seeing a therapist. She gives this story about her abusive marriage. And she says she's not sleeping because of the guilt. She says that her husband tried to kill or did kill her other son. And
her son, Virgil.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize she gave a name. Yeah. So she talks about the abusive marriage. She couldn't save her son. She can't sleep because of the guilt. And she's getting like prescription pills to help her with that. And the guy says, oh, I hope, you know, he went to jail or something like that. And she says, oh, yes, there was retribution.
And then we see her crushing up some tablets into the soup that they're bringing downstairs.
So I guess Susan won't be hearing the clanking anymore.
No. But can I just say something that annoyed me, which is like a dumb thing to get annoyed by, but annoyed me anyway.
Yeah.
Is there was like a beautiful like sprig of rosemary on this soup.
I knew it.
Tablet in after the fact, mixed it through, covered the rosemary in all this soup and just like chucked the spoon away and were like, this is good enough.
Yeah.
Yes. They had like garnished it beautifully and then she just shoves it in there and mixes it like there's nothing there.
Sorry, just before I forget, there is one last thing that we forgot to cover up on with Susan. Susan and Mike have decided they're going to have a casual relationship now.
Which is funny to me because at the end of last episode, I thought they had broken up when she was like crying like a baby about how they couldn't move in together and stuff. I thought that was them breaking up.
No, apparently that's her being like, we can't live together, but we can still date though.
Yeah, but like you literally live across the road. You can see each other like every freaking day. Why are you crying?
I know. It was just such a weird thing because then she's also like, so the issue is that like I don't want to break up, but also like I don't want to be with you because of your psycho son.
Yeah.
So let's keep things casual because I'm crazy about you.
Like I don't understand how this is a problem. Yeah, it's just like, oh, okay, you've got some stuff going on with your son. It's not a good idea for us to live together at the moment. Why don't you sort that out and I'll look after my daughter and we'll still date each other because like we literally live across the street from each other and I'll see you every freaking day. Like, how is that a problem?
It's a problem. You don't understand because Carla and Edie are moving in together and she's not.
Don't even have to work hard to stalk him. Just open your blinds and look out there. Like,
which we know she does already.
Like, so easy. I don't know what your problem is.
But yeah, I think that's everything for Susan and Betty.
And the last one is Bree.
It's gonna be Bree.
Yeah.
So this is the start of Phyllis just being absolutely hilarious and soaking in all of the sympathy that she can get. So the first time we see it is like, so it just happens over and over again throughout the episode, but the first time it happens is they're kind of waiting for dry cleaning with Bree and Phyllis just has no like patience left because she's like, I'm hungry. I can't wait. This is taking so long.
I told her I have low blood sugar and we've been here 30 seconds.
But then, like, Bree starts getting sympathy because of her husband passing and the dry cleaner's like, I'm not just saying this, but, like, Rex was one of my favorite customers. Like, he was a great guy. Sorry for your loss. And all of a sudden, Phyllis is like, oh, my God, my son.
I know. I could never eat a bite of food ever again.
Yeah, so she's just soaking up this attention. And then it just, like, keeps happening. Like, Bree's electrician called to say sorry and he didn't even get to speak to Bree because, you know, Phyllis spent the time crying on the phone.
Yeah.
She did the same thing when they were like having lunch and Lynette comes over to give her condolences to Bree. She starts crying and is like, yeah, my son, it's the worst thing in the world.
To lose a son, yeah.
To lose a son, yeah. So she's just like gathering sympathy from like absolutely everyone.
Her firstborn.
Which reminds me, does Rex have siblings that are just not in the show?
Yeah, I'd say yes, so.
But they didn't even turn up to the funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah, why would you pay for them? Maybe they were there. We just didn't know who they were.
But then why weren't they contributing to the funeral that their mum was bitching about? Why weren't they with Bree? Why weren't they with anything?
Maybe they did, but we didn't see it. Maybe that was all off camera.
Ah, I see. The off camera show.
Yeah, the off camera show. Exactly.
But also, if you have other kids, why are you hanging out with Bree? Like, surely you would be grieving with...
It's probably in the town that he lived in and where he was, like, going to be buried and stuff. They obviously lived in different places.
Yeah, but I still feel like if you're going to be grieving, you would want to be with people you love rather than...
Like his kids.
True.
Her grandchildren.
Yeah.
Who are not putting up with it and who are not...
They're on the off-screen show.
All right.
Anyway, so she's just, like, loving this attention. And then she actually, like, has a bit of a go at Bree. About like, why are you not sad? Everybody's wondering why you don't cry.
Exactly. And it's like, who is everybody?
Yeah, I know. It was literally no one but her. So at the same time, Bree's having trouble with Rex's insurance. They're taking a while to pay out. And Bree's trying to follow up with what's happening. And she was telling Phyllis all of this. So I think it's because we also see that Dr. Craig was suspicious about the note. And he kind of told them about what's been happening. So all the suspicions he kind of mentioned to Rex before he passed, he's been passing that on to the insurance guy.
Just quickly, though, my issue with the doctor and the insurance guy is he makes a point of saying, I've known, like, Rex and Bree for 20 years and never had any reason to suspect they were anything but a happy couple, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So why have you not brought this note to Bree if you've known them for 20 years and you think suddenly she's, like, been poisoning him with potassium or whatever? Like, why would you not mention any of this to Bree? Why would you not, like, I don't know. I feel like you would have a conversation before this.
Yeah, because, well, not really, because he probably thinks she's being dodgy, doesn't want to give her time to cover shit up if she's going to be investigated. So that makes sense to me. But what doesn't make sense to me is why are the cops not involved? Why are they telling the insurance guy?
Yeah, because the insurance guys are going to find out what really happened because they have the motivation not to pay.
Like, if you're worried about this, you tell the cops. You don't tell the insurance guy.
No, you tell the insurance guy.
They're all telling the insurance guy. This insurance guy is a part of the fabric of the society now. Yeah. And
insurance guy for president.
Insurance guy, exactly. So Bree comes back and he's like, I mean, not Bree, sorry. George comes back and he's like, you know, just being George, being overly into Bree, basically, while she's grieving. And he's like, I'm going to take you bowling and get your mind off things. And she's like, I don't really want to go bowling right now.
And can I just say, how inappropriate is it? Because, like, you were kind of dating Bree for a while. She found out that, like, you were still in love with her and you couldn't get over and be, like, friends with her just normally. And the second her husband dies, you're back in her life. Like,
yeah.
I feel like it's so inappropriate. Yeah. And, like, how does Bree not see through that?
And, like, I get it. If you weren't a creep, I get, like, being, like, wanting to reach out. But do it respectfully. Just, like, send her a message and be like, hey, sorry about your loss. Thinking about you. Let me know if there's anything I can do. But give her space.
Yeah, send flowers.
Yeah, but, like, give her space. Don't show up to her house and be like, grab your coat, bitch. I'm taking you bowling. Anyway, they end up hugging. And Phyllis sees through the window. So, of course, when you're grieving and, you know, people are sharing your condolences, there's no way you would hug them. It only means you're having an affair. Like, there's no other explanation. So this grieving widow being hugged by someone in front of her house, suspicious, immediately suspicious, call the police.
Red flag. Call the insurance guy.
Call the insurance guy, which is exactly what she actually does. So she calls the insurance guy and she's like, oh, by the way, Bree has a boyfriend. And obviously she's doing this so that, like, Bree doesn't get the payout or whatever. She's trying to punish Bree.
But, like, she's punishing her kid, her grandkids.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. What about your grandkids, though? Like, if you're worried, again, tell the police. Why are you telling the insurance guy?
I know, literally. 911, what's your emergency? I have an insurance claim.
Literally.
Like, insanity. And sort of between all of this and all of the hysterics that Phyllis is having, Bree also gets up, kind of tells her to calm down. When she doesn't, slaps Phyllis across the face and says, "There you go, you're all good now."
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was good.
That was so good. And it works, though. Like, Phyllis stops crying and just shuts up. Like, yeah.
But then she calls the insurance guy on her.
I know. It was like the literal definition of, if you don't start stop crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about energy. <I know.
laughs> Literally.
But yeah, Phyllis is so like sneaky two-faced, like pretends she forgives her and understands that it was coming from a place of grieving and we're all dealing with it differently, blah, blah, blah. And yeah. It's like, "Hello, Mr. Insurance Man."
Yeah. And this is the second time Phyllis has done this, because in the first episode she acted like everything was cool and then stuck a tie on him.
I know, from his prep school days.
Boy mums, man, there's something else.
I know, they actually are, like, genuinely.
I am not that invested in my kids and they're both boys.
Yeah, I was about to ask if you had any opinions on this.
It's not boy mum, I think it's just mum. That woman, right, she gives off, like...
Have you not seen all of, like, the memes and the Instagrams and the TikToks and everything?
I will send you boy mum memes.
I actually saw a license plate up here relatively recently that said boy mum and I wanted to throw up.
Is that a thing?
Yes.
We'll send you reels.
Send me some, because that's weird.
Sadie's like, "I'm worried now. What have I done?
Have I missed a trend? Have I missed it?"
It's not a trend.
So unlike me.
But yeah, Phyllis is the ultimate boy mum and she disturbs me.
I don't know. I didn't think of her as boy mum. I thought of her as like,
but until 3 seconds ago, you didn't know what boy mum was.
I was going to say that. You didn't know what it was.
Yeah, true. But, like, I thought of her as, like, that normal medley mother trope. You know how you get those overbearing mums?
Of boys, yeah, correct.
Why do I feel called out? I haven't done anything.
I just want to clarify. It's not simply the fact of having a son that makes you a boy mum. A boy mum is someone who's like, "My precious baby boy, no woman will ever be like love him more than I do. And I'm the one that's going to be the most important woman in his life. And I'm, you know, the center of his universe."
Mate, I'm trying to train my kids so that they can leave the nest at some point in their life and leave me the hell alone.
You're definitely not a boy mum. Like, you are a boy mum, but you're not a boy mum, you know?
You're a mother to boys, but you're not a boy mum. So I think that's everything. Anything else we missed, guys?
Not from me.
I don't think so.
All right, who has a worst sister story?
So I was at this little shop and I was looking for like jars and stuff for my kitchen. So I found this jar and it was like, so it's like this plain jar, like a glass jar with one of those like bamboo type looking vacuum lids at the top of it.
Yeah.
And on the pattern side of it, right, on the patterns of it, it was just like random numbers. So I'm like, "Oh, so this is cute. I could do something with this." All right, get this, right? So it came in like a set of three. And I said to the lady, "Oh, so how much is this?" And she's like, "Oh, the numbers are on the jar." It wasn't random numbers. They had written on the glass jar with like a, it was a price.
Lol. So there were like these random numbers that say things like 120 or something on it, and you're like, "Oh, cool, I want this."
No, it said 123, and then the next one over was 321. So I just assumed patterns. But also, who just goes and writes, okay, it's a glass marker, sure, it's going to rub off or wash off or whatever, but who, like, it should be on a price tag, no?
Less paper, I like it. But my issue is that the pattern that you wanted was 123321.
It was just like a set of three. I don't know. I assumed it was like cups or like, I don't know, some sort of like measuring system. I didn't think too much of it. It was just there.
Obviously.
They must have had nice handwriting too.
I fondled it and like, I fondled it. I had this jar in my hand and I was just looking. I was like, "Yeah, it looks cute." And that was it. I'm like, "Oh, so that's the price." I was not paying $321 for a freaking jar. So I left it. Jar did not come home with me.
Okay. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you guys next week with another episode. If you have any feedback for us or any comments or anything you want us to cover, please let us know. You can reach out to us on X, which at Sister Worst, or you can reach out to us on any of our other socials, which is Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, TikTok, or YouTube on at Worcestershire, or feel free to send us an email at worcestershire@gmail.com. Let us know what you think, and we'll see you guys next time. I'll count us out with a hada bum. One, two, three.
Hada bum.